We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also happy to have back here once again on the program, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And she is here on the program once a month on the second Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. And at this time of the year, maybe we would also get some houseplant questions. Actually, we could do that anytime. But so maybe right now you are already thinking about next year and what you'd like to plant. Maybe there is some problem from last year you still haven't solved, or you're thinking about, you know, certain things that you want to do early in the year, you just want to plan ahead. And of course, if you have questions about houseplants, we can do that too. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. And I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So, any point here, you have questions, you give us a call. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. Maybe I'll mention, too, here real quick right up front that in January, we're changing the schedule up just a little bit so that if you're keeping track of her, and somebody better, and in January, she will be here not on the second Tuesday, but on the third Tuesday, which we figure is January 19th. So at any rate, we have some callers. Maybe we should just go ahead and talk with them.
Okay.
All right.
We'll
very good. Starting with Champaign, line one.
Hi, that's me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Sandy, I'm trying to expand my garden into an area that was previously lawn, and I have this idea that one good way to prepare soil for gardening is to subject it to the freezing and thawing cycles that we get over the winter. So I've been trying in this crazy weather to run out there whenever I could and spade up portions of it as much as I could. So that by getting the soil real rough with a lot of air spaces in between it, it'll freeze down to a good depth over the winter. And I just wonder if in your opinion, my whole theory of doing this is a valid one, and if I should make that kind of effort or whether I should just let it go and spade it up in the spring.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of understand what you're saying, and I guess to some extent, you're probably right. I'm not sure it's worth the effort that you're putting into it, especially considering the weather is such as it is right now. So when you're digging it up, are you actually removing the sod, or are you just sod there?
I'm just throwing it over so that the grass is pointing face down. I put a couple weeks ago, I put some Roundup on it, and I think it's taken effect, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so you put Roundup on it. Did the grass then turn brown like it was dead?
Not exactly, because it was kind of cold. It was already sort of brown just because it was, the weather had turned cold. So I really can't tell whether the Roundup had any effect at all or not.
Right. Well, I guess a couple things. I'm not sure. I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure it's as much to an advantage as you think it might be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think at this point, so you have some of it. What you could do at this point, I guess what one of the things that I might think of is to actually go ahead and, you know, if you want to, I would just bury the sod in like just a little shredded newspaper, just some wet newspaper. I realize it's a little tough right now, but, you know, even to put down some wet newspaper and then just put compost and stuff on top of that and just smother this stuff out. And I think in the long run, you'll actually have a little benefit by adding the organic matter, but the fact that you are definitely killing off the grass at that point. I'm a little bit concerned. Of course, you're flipping it over, so it's probably going to die, but boy, sometimes that sod just does not die.
Yeah, I wasn't so concerned about the grass dying. I use a lot of mulch in the summer, and grass is usually the least of my problems. Thistles are the bane of my existence. But the question was whether or not this freezing helps the soil, you
right.
know, to
right. I understand.
To support the various kinds of vegetables. I'm probably going to have potatoes and tomatoes mm-hmm. and squash in there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think I would be more inclined to go the route that I was mentioning
okay.
in the sense
okay.
that you're adding organic matter, plus you're hopefully going to smother out any
yeah.
perennial weeds
okay.
that you might have, including thistles.
Okay. Okay.
If you go ahead and do that. Now, if you know, I think the whole idea, if you have halfway decent soil, the whole idea of tilling or whatever is not necessarily the route we want to go.
I see.
Because you're flipping it over and you're all the critters that are living in the soil, you're basically killing them off too.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Worms and all that kind of stuff that get flipped over obviously
yeah.
end up dying. So I'm not sure you're gaining
okay.
that much by doing it that way.
All right, I want to ask you a related question. There's this sort of movement that seems to be afoot on the internet, the zero-till movement in gardening.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like tillers. They say
mm-hmm.
tilling kills the soil or something like that. What's your thought on that?
I'm not a big believer in tilling either, to be honest with you. Now, I've changed my mind over the years. I was always one of those people that tilled. I think especially in our area of the world, I think tilling doesn't necessarily help. You know, we think of tilling because we want to increase the, you know, the air penetration and just, you know, the tilth of the soil. And I think there's other ways to do it that are not quite as disruptive.
I see.
So I think just adding mulch, adding compost, those kind of things and letting the worms and stuff. It's amazing. Worms will actually drag that compost down into the
yeah.
lower levels
yeah, well,
of the soil.
I do a lot of that. I just use leaf mulch. And
yeah. So I think in the long run, you're sort of working with the soil
yeah.
rather than sort of disrupting it by tilling.
Yeah. So if you use that method, when you go to plant, do you just like till up a little piece?
You don't till up anything. You just dig right into it and plant right into it.
Okay. Okay. But if you want to have your squash in a hill or something like that, don't you have to sort of hill it up a little bit first?
Right. You might want to do that with some crops, certainly,
uh-huh.
to go
yeah.
ahead and hill it up. But usually by the time you're putting all the compost and everything, you've almost created a slightly raised bed anyway.
Well,
you know,
but
some
I
of that will,
thinking in
will
the,
fall.
In the very, yeah, in the very spot where you wanted to put your seeds, you might want
right.
to hill that up a little bit.
Right, right. Certainly,
okay.
you might want to hill it. So you may want to just sort of try, you know, try a couple of different methods
okay.
and see which way you like it.
Okay.
And I'm all for less work.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean,
oh,
we have
so
plenty
am I.
Of work. We have plenty of work, and just
yeah, right,
flipping
yeah.
sod doesn't sound like a fun time to me.
No, well, it's
especially when it's 30 below.
Okay, all right, fine. Thank you very
all
much.
All right, very good. Bye. Let's go on here to Urbana, and line number two. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Yes.
excuse my cold. I have a question about the ash trees and the bore that's potentially going to kill the ash trees in
mm-hmm.
Champaign-Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
Twice I've seen newspaper articles that indicate that it might be the policy around here that let's go ahead and get rid of those trees slowly and avoid having them all die off at once. And I have a real problem with that approach. I take hundreds of fall color pictures in Urbana. I've been doing this for about 15 years, and the first nice yellow color that I find is the ash trees, and then the later ash trees, by the middle of November, middle of October, they're still
mm-hmm.
brilliant yellow from ash trees. So one of the nicest color sources in the Urbana trees is the green ash
mm-hmm.
tree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the last article, it seemed to explain the approach of going after cutting ash trees now was kind of a financial one. We don't want to be hit with a big problem all at once. And to that, I would say, well, if there's a financial issue, why not have a piggy bank and be putting some money in each year, getting ready for that time that we may get the big kill?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like your comment on that.
Well, I think you're right in the sense that there's a lot of different perspectives when it comes to the problem with emerald ash borer. I think the one thing we do know for sure, and pretty much all the experts agree on this, it's not a matter of if it comes here, it's when it comes here. And so we just have to plan, and obviously city arborists and folks that are working in these kind of areas really have to plan their time, their budget, and unfortunately a lot of them are working on a fairly small budget. So all those things, unfortunately, have to work into this. And I realize that's not something we necessarily want to do, is to take down an ash tree that certainly would have a few more years to it. But I think we have to look at the bigger picture, in that trees become hazardous when they get to the point where maybe they are, some of the limbs are dying because of emerald ash borer. So I think sort of thinking about, you know, this sort of, plus you don't want all the trees to die at the same time, because then all the replacements are the same age as well. So the idea of taking down some of the ash trees, getting some replacements of some other trees, then they have some growth. By the time we're starting to lose some of our ash trees because of emerald ash borer, then you have these younger trees that are coming up that are other species. So sort of thinking about the whole urban forest is one big thing. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and it's a very, very sad situation to see ash trees die. I'm with you. They're great trees. But unfortunately, it's one of those things that we really do have to think about the long term, on what's going to happen to these over time.
So, can I follow up?
Yeah, go ahead.
yes, the ash trees are at some point going to die off due to the ash borer. I think that's accepted, but aren't I right that it might be next year or it might be in 50 years?
No. I'd say it's within, it might be next year, it might be within 5 years.
And are you saying that because someone's going to move some wood from
Absolutely.
Bloomington Normal
Absolutely.
Over here and will infect our trees?
Yep. And it's not that the insect itself moves that quickly. It's because people move firewood. And we keep telling people, don't move firewood. Don't move firewood.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, people do. They bring it in, and next thing you know, then you have an infestation of emerald ash borer that you weren't counting on. So more than likely, it's not because the insect's moving. It's because people are moving the insect. So you're absolutely right. And it could very well, you know, and the other problem we have is that when it was found in Chenoa, which is one of our closest places, Chenoa, Bloomington area, they really figured it probably was there 6 to 7 years before they ever figured out really what was going on with them. So there's some big issues here that we really have to think about. So I'm with you, and it's really a tragedy. It really is a tragedy, but people do need to think about, you know, this is one of those things that certainly a budget issue that's going to be important for municipalities.
But the budget issue, the staff is small, but they have plenty to do now. If the cities were to put away money each year for the time that it really hits us, that's another approach. Instead of arguing financially,
right,
we have to start now.
And they are doing that.
Okay.
I will tell you that. They are
okay.
doing that. But the problem is we're talking about thousands and thousands, if not millions of dollars here for some areas. So
yeah,
this is a big issue. A big tree is expensive to take down, period.
Well,
so yeah. I think there's a lot of issues. I think you're absolutely right. And I think most of the arborists are taking down ash trees that are not doing well for some other reason. So
okay.
It's not that they're necessarily taking down every single ash tree. They're evaluating the ash trees. If it doesn't look very good, then they're taking it down now rather than waiting a couple years.
Okay,
so,
and I would like to see in the discussions amongst the arborist and what I read in the newspaper, I'd like to see a recognition that that's one of the most beautiful fall colors we have.
Right.
And that has to be balanced.
You're absolutely right. And it's actually one of the great trees for especially subdivision areas where we can get few things to live. White ash and green ash are great for those clay areas. Unfortunately, we're going to be losing that as an option.
Well, for homeowners, for people who might have in their yard, might have one or
mm-hmm.
two, you know, might
right.
just have
right.
a couple of trees. I think that for one thing, the advice is don't rush into doing anything in particular.
Right.
You know, you don't have to think about taking down the tree this year or next year, but you should be thinking about the fact that at some point, chances are probably you will have to take the
right.
tree down
right.
and replace it, you know, with something else. So I guess what kind of advice is being given to homeowners who might just have one or two?
I think it's the same. In some respects, it's the same kind of thing. If it's not looking good for other uh-huh. reasons, because ash trees do get other problems, if it's not looking good, you may want to think about taking it down now. Because as a tree gets bigger, it only gets more and more expensive to take it down because now it's yeah. a bigger tree. So you may want to think about that. If you have several ash trees, you might want to think about, okay, I'm going to take one down now because it's not looking very good. And then over the years, I'm going to sort of evaluate the other ones. There are treatment options, but we are telling people not to treat unless we have a confirm of emerald ash borer within 15 miles, which we don't really have that right now. So, but there are some insecticidal options that people may want to think about. but still, that's an expense that's going to have to be done every year or every other year, depending on what products you use. So people can think about that. So I think there's a lot of things people have to think about. How important is the tree? What is my budget right now? Maybe people want to start thinking about setting aside some money for actually having those trees taken down. I think there's a lot of options. There's a lot of good information out there. I will tell you, if people want to go to just Google Emerald Ash Borer, this is something that Michigan and Wisconsin have been going through for a number of years, and so there is a lot more information out there than there ever was before on how the insect is going to proceed and insecticidal options and all those good things. So we have lots of information out there if people want to really start thinking about it.
And how close to Champaign County has the borer been confirmed?
Shenoah Bloomington is the area, so McLean County.
Not that far away.
Right, and obviously here we're looking at a major interstate from Bloomington area to Champaign, you know, so there's obviously lots of people traffic that could very well bring the... So again, we'll encourage people, don't move firewood. Just use it local, buy it local, burn it right away. Don't move it around.
Yeah, okay. Our guest in this hour, Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on a Tuesday every month to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And if you have questions, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Just for a second to go back to the first caller, you know, from time to time, people have called in and said, I have an area, say a bed that's just weed infested, and I want to try to get rid of the weeds and then start again. And we've talked about the various kinds of things that you can do. So you could actually do that now.
Sure.
If you have this area that you're knowing you're not going to be planting anything or doing anything with it till next spring, you can actually do that thing with the wet. I think one of the ones you said you really like is the wet newspaper method.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they call it, you know, it's kind of got this terminology of a lasagna gardening where you actually sort of layer it. Yeah, it's like making lasagna and you start layering it with different things that you might have, whether it's compost or shredded leaves or grass clippings or whatever it is. But you just, and it used to be called sheet composting, but they don't call it anymore. It's lasagna gardening, sounds better. But the whole idea is that not only are you smothering out the existing weeds, but you're also adding organic matter to the soil, and that's generally a good thing that we're going to have, especially if you have high clay content soils. I did this technique with Creeping Charlie. I had this horrible bed of it was strawberries is what it was supposed to be, and then Creeping Charlie got in, and I was having such a hard time getting rid of the Creeping Charlie. It was overtaking the strawberries, so I decided I'm just going to redo the whole bed. So I did the lasagna gardening, smothered everything out, and it really did. I was impressed because I wasn't sure if it was going to work. It worked very well. The Creeping Charlie, amazingly enough, creeped out from the sides of where the wet newspaper was. So it was still, you know, off to the side.
This surprises you?
I know. It was still off to the side. It found that little bitty niche over there in that corner. But it did work within the bed itself.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Sometimes that's a good way to do it, if you've got a little time.
All right. Next, let's talk with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have some flowering crabs that last year just didn't seem to do anything. I don't know if there's a disease going around, but I've had beetle problems later in the year, but this year they just barely did anything and almost just looked dead.
Yeah, I would tell you that flowering crab apples, had a horrible time last year with a fungal disease called apple scab. And it's always worse when we have cool, wet conditions. Well, if you think about our past year, it was cool and wet for a long time. So they seem to get it, depending on which ones there are. Some of them do tend to be resistant, which is nice. But some of them really get it bad, or at least to give it to some extent every year. But last year was terrible. And a lot of them were defoliated by the end of June, when normally they wouldn't have been defoliated until July or August. So they defoliated like a month or so early. The good news is, it's generally not life-threatening. Hopefully we don't have another year like we had this last season when it comes to fungal diseases. But about the only thing you can do is either, you know, prune it at ground level and get a resistant variety, or think about actually using a fungicide spray, but you have to do several sprays, and it has to be early in the season to actually protect the leaves against infection.
So it was more a weather thing. And also,
it was a lot
around them, they have tons of shoots growing out everywhere that I've clipped over the years, but they keep getting bigger and stronger. Can you till those, or what do people do? I mean, they are really tough and and they grow out all over the yard, out 6, 10, 12 feet.
I know.
Right around the base, mostly.
Yeah. Crab apples are notorious for getting suckers, which is what we call those. And unfortunately, there really isn't any good technique. You don't want to use Roundup or any of the herbicides on them. And about the only thing you can do is actually to either mow over them, depending on where they are, or to cut them off. But try and cut them off. Really dig down and see if you can cut them off as low as you possibly can. Because sometimes if we cut them off just at the top, you're actually creating more sprouts because then it comes off from the side. So sometimes if you just spend a little time with a trowel, kind of dig down and try and cut those off. Some people have said if they're small enough, they said they had better luck if you kind of ripped them off. And I think the idea is you're probably removing that growth bud. So there really isn't a whole lot of things. I actually tried a product a couple of years ago called Sucker Stopper. And it kind of slowed them down, but it was a little expensive, and I think the jury's still out on that product, but you may want to even think about something like that. But there's some very specific criteria on how you use it and when you use it. So I wish there was a good answer.
Yeah, the amazing thing about nature is weeds grow where nothing else will, and suckers, you know, you can't get the tree to grow, but the suckers grow like crazy.
Maybe we just need to change our expectations.
Yeah, I think you just gotta let it be a little bit.
Have it be a crabapple shrub.
Well, that's what I've got, and I don't know if you could. I don't want to take up all the time, but I mean, every year I plan on doing gladiolas, and I never do. Can I do them in the spring? And where would you buy your bulbs? And what would you expect to pay for them? And I'll hang up and listen. I really appreciate your show.
Sure.
Mm-hmm, thanks.
Sure. I think with gladiola bulbs, or like with any bulbs, you certainly can buy them in the springtime normally, and that's when they would be available. You pretty much get what you pay for when it comes to bulbs. The bigger, the better. And generally, the bigger, the more expensive. If you get mixed colors, they tend to be cheaper. If you get one single color or a certain variety or whatever, they tend to be more expensive. So it really kind of depends, again, on sort of your expectations on what you want. They're certainly available in the spring. They're not hardy, so generally it would be something we'd have to dig up every year. And they like warm temperatures, so you wouldn't plant them until mid-May or so.
Mm, okay. And on just I'll just ask here for the sake of asking, spring flowering bulbs, is it too late?
Hey, get out there. Get your auger and drill in the soil.
If you can even, well, I know that there are some people that say, look, as long as I can dig in the soil, I would think, you know, why not? Especially if you've got bulbs and if they're paid for, you might as well go out and put them in the ground.
I guess that's my feeling, is to go ahead and get them out there. And usually, you know, the soil temperatures are, I haven't checked the last few days, but usually, you know, they're still staying at that 45, 40 degree. So as long as it's above freezing, there's always that chance that they can go ahead and set out roots and do their own thing. And I'm with you. If you already paid for them, get out there and as soon as you can and plant
them. All right. Next caller is Cisna Park, line 2. Hello?
Hi. My question is, I actually have two. I have pulled up some very healthy geranium plants. I've been told if you put them in a bag, shake off the dirt first, and put them in a cool place, they will winter over. Am I correct?
You certainly can try that. Usually what I have found is you get about a 50% success rate. So you probably lose half of them.
Okay.
You're probably better off if you can actually bring them in and grow them on as a house plant.
Oh, really?
Right.
Oh.
And they'll do fine as a house plant.
Okay.
They'll do just fine. And then to plant them out.
Do you cut off the dead and just start from a little stump?
I would cut it back. Anything that's obviously dead, I would cut that off. I wouldn't do a whole lot of heavy pruning until the spring, if you can, unless they're just so big that you really have to prune them back to get them in. But or you can take cuttings. Sometimes people do that. They actually root very well from a tip cutting.
Mm.
So there's a number of things you can do with geraniums if you still have them.
Uh-huh. My second question is, I have an offer of sheep, llama, and donkey manure to put on my flower beds. Is that a good manure?
I have. Who is telling us about you? You do. I think. Producer Harriet was telling me about you do. And it's sheep manure. I thought that was kind of cute. From what I can tell, really all that stuff seems to be pretty good. And I've actually heard that llama manure is really good. I don't know.
I'm lucky then.
Yeah, you are fortunate. What good friends you have. See, that's a sign of a true gardener if they can get excited about llama dew.
And he suggested that putting it on now and let the snow help it work in and so on. Is that the way you would do it?
Yeah, I think that's just fine, unless you move it in, unless you work it within your compost pile or something along those lines. But I think to go ahead and put it out into an area is fine. I assume it's somewhat decomposed at this point. It's probably been around for a little while. But
well, I'm not even sure about that. I think some of it is, and maybe if I wanted to get a lot, it might not be. So I think maybe that was the purpose of just laying it out on top of the ground.
Yeah, right? You'd want it to be pretty well decomposed by the time you're actually gardening into it, especially if you're doing any kind of root crops or anything that might be in contact with it. Mm-hmm. You'd want to make sure it's...
That would be in the spring.
Right, right, okay. Absolutely. But it's not going to decompose a whole lot over the winter because it's so darn cold.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Thank you. Our guest this morning in this hour, Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on the second Tuesday, she's here. And we talk about lawn and garden care. Just on your calendar, mark down the fact that in January, she will be here on the third Tuesday. So after today, the next visit is January 19th. And in the meantime, she's in the phone book. And no matter where you live, there should be an Extension person near you. Yeah. Just call her, just to give her a call. If you want to say hi. Extension is in the phone book, and so you can find the Extension. You can always find the Extension person near you, and also if you have web access, they have a really good website. And there's lots of different kinds of information there, so it could be that your question, you could get an answer to your question by going to the website, but there's always somebody like Sandy, mm-hmm. no matter where you are in the state, who's there to answer those kinds of questions, so... Here on the show, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and we'll go to Rockville, Indiana, next, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I have a major concern with the ash trees that you were discussing a second ago.
Yes?
I have a environmental science degree in the background, and I've studied many invasive species and affecting trees in the past, especially the chestnut trees and so on. And a major problem with the chestnut trees is there are rare cases of resistant trees that are able to resist the diseases. But a lot of the times then, as well as now with the ash tree, it seems, the foresters and the horticulturists are encouraging people to cut the trees to remove the headache and to go on and get the lumber to sell. And so therefore, the potential for the resistant trees are... because there's so many over cut ahead of time. And I wanted to know why they continue to do this.
Well, yeah, I think there's lots of things to think about here, as we've talked about. There is certainly the practical aspect and the hazard aspect of having a tree that's dying. So that's something we just really have to think about. But I will tell you, there's a major effort to collect seeds of ash trees. And you may want to find out more information about that and get involved in that, where people actually, throughout this area, especially where ash trees are native, they're actually collecting the seed. And the idea that eventually they can go ahead and plant some of these out, and then at least they have that, and exactly what you're talking about, at least they have that genetic, you know, composition, you know, saved from a lot of different trees. But expecting a tree is really going to have a hard time trying to be resistant to emerald ash borer, because it comes in so quickly, and it comes into a tree that's not necessarily dying for other reasons. It kills a tree very quickly. And so there doesn't seem to be, at least within Wisconsin and Michigan area, they're not seeing resistance. And that's unfortunate. And, you know, and we're talking about areas where they have forested areas of green and white, and they're not necessarily taking them down just right away. They're looking for resistance, and it just doesn't seem to be out there right now for emerald ash borer, which isn't invasive. It's not native to this area. So I think you bring up a really good point, but it's certainly a point that is taken, and people are thinking about that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, uh-huh. Very good. Next is someone in Charleston. Line 3. Hello.
Yeah, hi. A response to the rototiller person. I had a similar problem, but as a potter, I was thinking of Ruth Stout's No Work, No Till Garden or whatever.
Right.
Remember that book?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great book.
As a potter wedging clay and mixing, what I used to do was put as much on in the fall, any kind of additives, rototill the poop out of it, and then cover it with straw.
Oh.
And then you're sort of, you redo it again in the spring, of course, but mm-hmm. my question is, there sort of an analogy between mixing clay and, you know, from clay we come or something, but anyway. Oh, and the other thing was, to the person up north, we have Mama Poo down here too in Charleston.
Oh, hey.
But it does take a while. So
does it?
If you put it on the compost in the fall, really cover it with a lot of mulch, and it does heat up. So I think it does break down even in the winter if it's covered enough.
Right, right.
And
if it's,
maybe even put a tarp over the top.
Right.
To enclose that whole bunch, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's fairly fresh manure, it's probably better off to compost it rather than just putting it on top of the garden. I mean, I think that's what it is.
Really hot. I mean,
yeah.
But Cisna Park, apparently people are raising llamas all over the place, which is interesting.
So they need to start packaging it and selling it off as llama
poo. Yeah, there aren't they really from South America, high in the Andes and stuff?
So I think there's as many ways to garden as there are gardeners. And so we all have our different techniques. And I think you're absolutely right. And if people find the book, Ruth Stout's No Work Garden,
that's a great book. Also, the Charleston weavers use llama in their weavings. So whoever has llamas, when you, I guess you comb their coats. I'm not familiar with llamas, but it's valuable to artists also.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can spin it. I'm not sure.
I think.
I love the show.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Okay, have a wonderful day.
Yeah, hey,
you too. I think the biggest thing with tilling, too, especially when our soil is really wet, it's like the last thing you want to do is to till wet soil because you really are going to destroy the structure rather than help it. And unfortunately, we've had some really wet seasons here where it's just really going to be a big issue to try and till soil when it's wet, whether it's fall or spring. So I think that's the other issue when it comes to tilling is that can you do it when it's really wet? And the answer is no. So.
Okay, and what is it? What is it that's the problem with using manure that's fresh? You want it to? Is it that it's too harsh, or you want it to? I know you want it to start breaking down.
Right,
some.
Right, right. Well, there's a couple of issues. Probably one of the things, and the caller just mentioned, he said it was really hot.
Okay.
And manure, especially, has a tendency to have a lot of nitrogen in it, and it can break down really fast because it has a lot of nitrogen in it, which is something we like, but it actually in the process can actually rob plants from nitrogen because they're actually as they're breaking it all down, they actually can rob nitrogen from the plants because the bacteria needs a lot of nitrogen in order to go ahead and do its thing. So even though the compost has nitrogen in it, there's still some big issues with using it on plants. So it actually can burn the plants. The other thing is the fact that because, these are still mammals, there's certainly some disease issues that we'd always want to think about with fresh manure. And so you definitely, one of those things, especially if you're using root crops or lettuce or anything like that where it's actually touching the soil, then there certainly would be some just health issues, public health issues. So there's a couple different things probably there. So it's better to compost it first.
All right. Let's see. Next, somebody in Piatt County, line number one. Hello?
Oh,
hello. Yeah.
I usually don't overwinter things. They always look so sad. But I brought in my beautiful rosemary. I didn't really use it for an herb. I just loved its foliage. And I brought it in, and our living room is cool, and I read up, and it said that it needed light. So it's got a lot of light, but it's so huge. It's got like 12 to 14 inch, would you call them stems?
Uh-huh.
So I just dug it out of the ground and stuck it in a pot, and it looks very happy. Do I trim it back so that it can keep growing, or because they're really long now?
I would think rosemary chicken is good. There's all kinds of really, really good rosemary recipes.
Rosemary and potatoes. They're just like we're made for each other.
And actually, somebody told me one time that they actually use, because they're kind of woody. The stems are actually kind of woody. Mm-hmm. They took the leaves off and actually used those for kebabs.
For skewers.
Actually, skewers and kebabs. I mean, David knows it.
Oh, yeah.
So I would use it, enjoy it. And it'll do fine. And it does like, cooler temperatures. Don't let it dry out too much, those kind of things. But it sounds like you've kind of taken care of all that. But I'd say go for it. Enjoy.
It's huge. I am just
go for it.
If I cut it back, will it stimulate it to grow more, taller?
Yeah. Eventually it will. It depends on how much light it has. Usually at this point, there's just not enough light that it really doesn't do much in the way of growing. But it certainly will as the days get longer and all that kind of good stuff in the springtime. So.
Okay, and a quick second question is, I perhaps missed this at the beginning, but we have such fertile soil around here, and then I see all these pictures in the magazines of people who have created these perfect raised beds, you know, mm-hmm. perfectly squared off, and they have a little raised bed of this and a little raised bed of that. What's the advantage to raised beds?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a number of things. I think one thing is it does tend to dry faster in the springtime.
Oh.
So you get that little bit of, and also the soil just tends to warm up a little bit better in the springtime. So often you can actually get in there a little bit earlier in the spring. I think the other thing, the fact that it's in this sort of enclosed area, people tend to not walk on it. And if they don't walk on it, then you don't get soil compaction, and then the plants are a lot happier. I think especially if you have kids or other people that don't necessarily know you don't walk in garden beds, I think it's good for that kind of thing. It looks, for a lot of people, they think it looks neater. Let's see what else. So it does improve drainage, especially if you have really clayey soil. You know, you may decide you want a raised bed simply because, you know, then it will actually drain better for you. So I think it's, everybody just kind of has to look at it, but it's certainly kind of a big thing right now.
It is.
Yeah, but they're great. I have some raised beds too, and I love them.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your help.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Now, just before we get away from the herb thing, though, now, I've tried doing this actually myself and not had a lot of luck.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was because, you know, in the wintertime, the air in our homes, it's really dry. And things like these woody herbals, they're actually... They're used to living in sort of a moist environment, and if it gets too dry, they're not going to be happy about it.
Yeah, they're definitely not happy with especially dry, warm air.
Yeah.
So if you tend to keep your house really warm in the 70s or so, and then the fact that it's so dry, they don't like that at all. So they really would like to have a temperature that's more like in the 63, 65, which for a lot of people seems like it's really cool. And that will help immensely when it comes to the amount of moisture that's in the air. So that will help. And then just the fact that just not letting them dry out too much, because sometimes it'll say on the label, you know, don't overwater or something. But I found people tend to not water enough in the wintertime because the air is so dry, then the soil and everything tends to dry out pretty fast. So trying to keep that moist. So I think it's one of those things you really have to kind of get into the mode of how to keep Rosemary over the winter, because sometimes she's just not very happy.
Yeah. Let me see, 15 minutes left in this part of Focus with Sandy Mason. Questions welcome on things that grow in the home landscape. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And the next caller is in Champaign, line 3.
Good morning.
Yes.
Is it, since I missed fertilizing the lawn this fall, is there any point in putting down the fall fertilizer now?
I think at this point I'd probably not do it, because the concern is that instead of actually being taken up by the plants, it might just end up as, you know, it's just going to roll off and end up being as pollution. So I think you're better off probably waiting till spring. Usually we say, you know, a little bit later than what probably a lot of people say, and normally that we're thinking about the 1st of May when it comes to fertilizing.
Okay.
So that's really probably your better bet at this point.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And line number 2 next. So someone on a cell phone. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have two questions. One is, I bought this house 4 years ago, and it had this wonderful little, it's got tulips in a bed, and it's got what I think are daylilies or whatever. And it seemed like last summer, they weren't as vibrant. They weren't as, it seemed like they didn't last as long in terms of the flowering and stuff. So I was wondering what I could do for next year, like if I could do fertilizing or what to kind of help them out.
So you're talking specifically about the tulips just didn't seem as vibrant, or?
Yeah. It's a whole flower bed. It's got tulips, and I think daylilies and other flowering. I'm not very much of a gardener.
No, that's fine.
Flowering plants.
So it just seemed like none of it did very well. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, they were there, but it didn't last very long and weren't very full.
Yeah. I guess I think about a few things. Tulips are not one of those that generally are long-term. It depends on which tulips they are, and some of them tend to be a little bit more long-term than others. But some, especially some of the great big ones that we think of, usually a couple of years, and they kind of fall by the wayside, and you get fewer and fewer flowers. So tulips just kind of naturally do that over time. I'd also wonder a little bit about, usually daylilies will do anything at any time kind of thing, where they don't skip a beat with much of anything. But I would think about, you know, I don't know if this is getting more shade. They actually do much better if they're in sun. If this is getting to be a shadier bed, they wouldn't do as well. And also, it was awfully wet this last year. So if this is in bed that tends to stay wetter, they might not do as well. So part of it might be just the season that we had, but I'd really wonder about how much sun they're getting, too.
Okay. I don't think there was a big change with regard to that. Can you do anything like fertilizing or composting, and when would I do that if I was going to?
Well, you certainly can think about, you know, if you wanted to go ahead and mulch, or to actually, you know, you can certainly mulch with compost as well. Generally, we say to wait until the soil actually freezes if you're actually going to do it in the winter time. So usually by now, we're finally getting to the point where the soil's, at least the top surface is frozen. So you could certainly do that now, usually by the end of December. So you can go ahead and do that. So you certainly could do that now. And that would be just fine. You could try and fertilize next year if you want to go that route. I'd probably be more inclined to do the mulching composting method and kind of go from there and see if that doesn't help.
Okay. My second question concerns, we had a volunteer catalpa tree, and it's still fallen up. We're planning to replant it. But it also, I noticed near the end of, I don't know, last summer, it started getting this, the leaves, got brown spots and yellow spots on it, and I wondered what that was and what we could do about that.
Yeah, with catalpa, they're probably like a lot of trees in the sense that they do get some fungal leaf diseases. That's what I'm guessing on this particular one. And as I said before, when we were talking about apple scab on crab apples last year, was a plant pathologist's dream, I would think, at least, because it seemed like all the fungi that caused disease issues were really doing very well. So I'm not sure I would think about that necessarily. That's going to get that every year. I'm not sure I've ever seen that necessarily on catalpa every single year. So it could have been just the season, the fact that it was just a really good season to get some leaf disease problems. If you were going to try and take care of it, unfortunately, you'd have to actually do a protective fungicide spray. So you have to do it before the disease occurs. So it's one of those catch-22 things. So I think I would just sort of evaluate it next year and see how it does. Most of the time, leaf diseases are not life-threatening. They just don't look all that great.
Okay. When would be a good time to transplant?
I think you certainly could do it. Probably at this point, I'd probably wait till early spring. Certainly like March or so would be a good time.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And we will continue now. We have somebody else here, and they're in Urbana. Line one, hello.
Am I on?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I got an email from a friend in New Zealand, and she is trying a product that she calls Neem, N-E-E-M. Do you know anything about that?
Uh-huh.
And how does one, she said it's a fungicide. An insecticide, and she's going to use it around her tomatoes.
Well, it is a botanical. It actually comes from a tree.
Right.
And so there's a lot of interest in it. I have seen it used for a number of different, I'm probably more familiar with it as an insecticide rather than as a fungicide. When you say she's using it around her tomatoes, I'm not sure. I'd really have to check the label on that to make sure it's labeled for vegetables. In this country. So that would be the one thing. I'm not sure it's labeled for vegetables, but that would be one thing to check on the label to make sure.
Is it available locally?
Pardon?
Is it available locally?
Sure.
Okay.
It's called BioNeem, I think is one of the brand names. And you probably, it's one of those things on the shelf you probably just never really noticed. But it certainly is in this country. It's certainly available. I'm just not sure the one that we have is labeled for edible crops or not. I've certainly seen it used on roses and a number of things. Thrips was probably one of the things that I saw it used for, you know, a little insect that sometimes roses can get. So it certainly has some uses out there. So sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And we have maybe about 5-6 minutes left. If somebody else wants to call in here, talk with Sandy, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Anything in the way of events coming up that you might want to mention?
There's one in March. Is never too early to think about.
Put
spring.
That down. Get your if you have a 2010 calendar, get that out.
Yeah. Marissa, we're all thinking about spring. Actually, March 26th and 27th is our garden day that we do every other year or so, and so that's going to be coming up at the I Hotel, March 26th and 27th. And we actually have Joe Lample, who is Joe the gardener. And sometimes if people see Garden Smart on PBS, they might see him. And so we're going to have some great speakers. Diane Nolan, who's sometimes on this program, and certainly yep. Illinois Gardener is yep. going to be there as well. So a lot of great speakers. So, you know, something to look forward to. We got to think about spring, right?
I know. Well, you know, there are people who all winter are sitting there thinking about what they're going to do. Real dedicated gardeners, they're all winter. Yeah. They're sitting there thinking about you know, what they're going to do next year.
And certainly Herb Day is coming up. It's January 16th or 17th. I'm sorry. Somewhere in there.
Aren't you supposed to know all this stuff? Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't have a calendar.
You always come prepared with stuff like this, and so now I've thrown you
off. I was thinking about March. I have stuff for March.
Well,
but Herb Day is always a good thing.
Okay.
But Chuck Boyd.
Okay. Okay. Call Chuck. He's in the book, too.
Chuck Boyd, and he can tell you all about Herb Day.
All right. Terre Haute, next caller. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'll be quick. I have a, on the east side of my house, it's the tree row, and the yard is only 5, maybe 6 feet deep from the sidewalk back to the house. And it's also very root bound with the tree roots. And I'm having trouble, and shady in the summertime, of course. Having trouble getting some kind of ground cover to grow there. Any suggestions for that kind of thing?
Have you tried anything in particular, or just haven't really had any luck?
I think periwinkle, they call it.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't do much for you?
No, it does well in the kind of the sunny areas where the roots aren't quite so bad.
Right, right.
It's been there quite a long time, but there's one spot there. I'll be darned if I can get anything to grow there.
Yeah. I think what you're finding, are these maple trees or do you know?
Yes, maple trees. Maple, and what's the one with the spiky balls?
Sweet gum.
I hate those trees.
Okay, so you're waiting for the sweet gum borer to come through. And unfortunately, it's part of it. So I think number one, that one of the big problems with that area is the fact that it's not just shade, it's dry shade is what you figured out. And for a lot of plants, they don't tolerate that well at all. They'll take shade, but they don't like dry shade. So I think you have to really think about, especially that first year when you're putting stuff in, you're going to have to water. And you might even think about periodically even water. You know, even once stuff gets established. I don't know if you necessarily need something that's really short or not, but there actually is a couple different plants. There's one called barrenwort, which I know is kind of a weird name. But actually, does barrenwort, B-A-R-R-E-N-W-O-R-T, barrenwort. And actually, it's actually a pretty nice plant. It's a little taller maybe than what you typically might think of. But once it gets established, it actually does pretty well in those kind of dry, shady spots. I'm trying to think of some other things that might do okay. You know, English ivy might do okay. I think it's another one of those you'd probably have to do a little bit as actually going to water it periodically. Pretty much all the things I can think of are so weedy. I almost hate to tell you about those. So I think probably just thinking about things that might take drier shade or just realize you're going to have to water them periodically.
You think if I kept watering and trying to train the periwinkles spread out there? And
yeah, I think that's the biggest problem. And you might even think, although, you know, we don't recommend putting a lot of soil on top of roots, but you could put a little top dress of, you know, a quarter of an inch, half inch or so of like compost or something on top of the roots. And that might be enough to help a little bit, and you know, getting stuff established. But I think just trying to get them established, you're going to have to water.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let's get another caller in. I think maybe I might have skipped over somebody here. Williamsport, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Yeah. I have a question about artichokes.
Okay.
I have some globe artichokes that I grew in my garden this summer, but they didn't end up producing anything. I heard that if I keep them over the winter and replant them next year, they may survive and be more productive in the second year. I was wondering, what's the best way to keep those plants over the winter?
Yeah, wow. And as you found out, artichokes just need a really long season that we just don't have. Trying to keep those, I've never tried to keep those over the winter, so I'm just kind of stabbing in the dark here, to be honest with you. So I think probably what I would do is trying to keep them fairly, you probably don't have any area that's going to be somewhat cool but still have light to it?
Well, no, I have like a root cellar, but that's That's about it. But it's not got any light.
But there's no light. I don't know how well, you know what, I don't know how many plants you have. You might try them in a root cellar. I imagine they really are going to need more of a light, a cool lit area.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how, you know, you're going to be able to do that or not. And you probably have come upon the fact, I give you a lot of credit for trying globe artichokes because they're not very easy to grow around here.
Yeah, no, they were a little bit of a challenge. I also have some potted blueberries. Are those okay to stay in the pots over the winter, or should they go somewhere warmer?
Do you have them? You have them outside in pots?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how big the pots are, but generally you're better off if it's a, you know, it really needs to be a big pot for them to survive outside in a pot. So I think you're better off if you want to keep them in the containers. I assume these are containers that don't break in the wintertime.
Right.
So they're not ceramic or anything. If you want to actually keep them in the pot, what you might want to do is actually just sink them down into the soil, you know, pot and all, just sink them down into the soil. And it's really, it's that rapid freezing and thawing that generally kills them off when they're up in a pot like that. So okay. You really need to get them down. Or if you have a mulch pile, I'd sink them into the mulch pile, something so that that pot isn't just out in the elements by itself. Or if you have a, you know, garage or someplace where it stays consistently at 35 or so, that would be fine too. But they have to go through a cold period, but in a small pot, that's going to be really tough.
Okay. All right. That sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
Thanks.
We'll try to get at least one more, and that would be Urbana next, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
A couple of questions about a tree. Mm-hmm. We have the locust tree, three of them in our backyard. The one on the end, after we've been here about 15 years, and about 4 years ago, 1 year, it started to have pods.
Mm-hmm.
And then I trimmed it a little bit, and then it skipped a year, and then it came back, and it's been pods ever since, and it gets all over my neighbors.
Yeah.
Is that irreversible?
Yeah, a lot of honey locusts, a lot of times you can buy them as seedless varieties. Unfortunately, sometimes even the seedless varieties will still produce some pods. If this is one that just seems like, now how old are these, did you say?
Well, the house is 40 years old, and we've been here 15, and I think it might be 30 years.
Yeah, and as far as you know, it hadn't actually produced any pods before then? Of course, you probably don't know.
No, it didn't. We were here like 10 years, and it didn't before it even anything popped out.
Well, there is a thing, of course, with trees in the sense that, is it irreversible? Some years you're going to find there's a lot more pods than other years. Is it going to completely go back to no pods? I would say the answer is no to that. I think at this point it's pretty well proved itself. But some years it's going to be worse than others, and it's probably going to be an every other year thing, I'm guessing. So that's probably not a whole lot you can do about that. And sometimes what we'll find with trees is they have to be like 25, 30 years old before they actually express their gender. Can I say that? Before it actually shows up where they're actually producing seeds. Sometimes it takes a long time before trees will actually produce seeds. So I wish I could have you give you a better answer than that, but I have a feeling you're going to have the pods.
And I must jump in here. My apologies. So we have one more call and we just can't take. We're out of time. Sandy will be back in January on this time, though, in January and the third Tuesday. She'll be here January 19th. And in the meantime, you can tune in for Illinois Gardener on WILL-TV Thursday nights at 7. It's a live show, another opportunity to ask questions. Sandy is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.